Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. DA got that dope.
You already know my protocol. I wouldn't say they greedy, but they come back for more.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Fantasy CBB Super Show. Presented to you, as always, by RotoCurve. I am your host, Walter Waddell, a.k.a. DubDeuce85. It's January 17th, 2020. Those of you listening on the East Coast, it is, January 18th? Big slate tomorrow, as always. We try to do this Friday show for you guys, get you ready for the 10-game slate on DraftKings and the 11-game slate on FanDuel. I'm going to be joined tonight by my man, Johnny. He's going to be giving us some betting advice and, you know, giving us some tips on Stanford. I'm sure there's going to be some Kentucky hate, some various other Johnny-isms that everybody knows and loves. So got that going on. Mania, bracket mania going on tomorrow as well on DraftKings. Let's see, let's get this going here for you guys. Q number, the 250 and the 25. So that's number 16-man, 250, that's number 4, and then the $25, which is number 5. So I've already given out, 3 seats. It's going by quite quick, really, really quick. So, but there's lots of time for you guys to get seats, get tickets, all that good stuff, so make sure you jump into that. It's a very nice slate, lots going on. Let's get Johnny on the line here. How are you doing tonight, brother?
Oh, Walter, I'm doing well, and I got a lot to say tonight, man. I got a lot going in my head right now, but I promise you this will be profitable to everyone who listens to this show.
That's what we like to hear, because more and more states are legalizing sports betting, and DraftKings Sportsbook and FanDuel Sportsbook are becoming more and more available to people. So that side of things is going to be much more desirable from people. So I'm glad to hear that.
And, yes. Kentucky? Oh, well, we'll get to that, because that, I've had to chew on that for 3 days. That, I just have to ask a simple question, and this is me just being as honest as I could fucking be. How in the sweet blue hell can you give up almost 60 and a half to a South Carolina team that can't fucking score?
That's a mystery, man. I mean, clearly, I'm not going to speak too ill of Kentucky, because I have a lot of subs who are Kentucky fans, but they're clearly going to have problems in March. They're trending in the right direction in terms of getting together, because, you know, the last few years Calipari's had some teams that have, you know, all these alpha personalities that have to mesh together and play as a team. So it takes some time to figure it out. But they've got some bad, questionable losses. You know, the loss against South Carolina is certainly confusing, because that South Carolina team is really bad. A.J. Lawson, who I thought was going to be a superstar this year and has looked good, but overall he's not been good, and he didn't even do that well in the game. He had, 4 points or something like that. It was Cuisinart. Cuisinart, the super sub, Cuisinart came out in the game and just they couldn't stop him. He was red hot.
No, I mean, the loss to Evansville is very curious, considering they were favored by 25 when they lost to him. I could tell you that I will be betting Arkansas tomorrow just out of spite.
but yeah, so Jermaine Cuisinart was, you know, he didn't play a couple games ago. I think he had an injury. Since he's been back, he's had usage rates of 36% and 30%, and he's a freshman, and yeah, he had 26 points against Kentucky, started and played 34 minutes. They just had no answer for him. So I don't know if that's more of a, you know, this kid's better than everybody thought, or Kentucky D was just, I think maybe they thought, hey, we don't have to bring our A game here. Maybe the effort wasn't there. I'm not quite sure what that was about, but that was a very bad loss. I don't know, man. I don't know.
And Walter, I can tell you another team that I'm going to be on tomorrow, only because it's a spot thing, and I might be regretting this because, like, you know how much I love taking bad coaches. I'm taking our guy, Coach Keats, tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well
let's
here's
get...
the issue.
I
refuse to believe Clemson is good. They beat North Carolina because I think North Carolina is a horrible basketball team. And they beat Duke because Duke was in a complete and total look ahead to Louisville. And I could tell you that Vegas really thinks Duke's winning that game because, Walter, I didn't think the line would be what it is. Duke's favored by 7 against Louisville at Cameron, and the metrics website that me and you referenced has Duke by 14 in that game.
Weird. Yeah, I don't know, man. That seems a little wild to me. I think Louisville is better than that. But let's circle back to the current slate because people are going to want to know about bets for this. Let's talk about the first game here, Ohio State versus Penn State. KenPom has it 70-68 in favor of Ohio State. Ohio State has been, and you know, not looked great. They had a really nice out-of-conference schedule. They beat North Carolina, who people thought, you know, was going to be better. Obviously, Cole Anthony injury was bad. They beat Penn State 106-74 at home last time they played. Now they're going to play in Penn State's floor. Penn State is you know, they're a really good team too, but they've had a really rough stretch. They've dropped 3 in a row in conference to Rutgers, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. Mike Watkins has regressed back, and means that he's been fouling a lot. Lamar Stevens has been fouling a lot. So these are two struggling teams coming in. Penn State is 48th in tempo ranking. Ohio State is, 267th. This is a game for fantasy purposes that I'm not going to want to probably touch. Dwayne Washington was out last game. He has a 1-game suspension. He should be back. And Luther Muhammad was also suspended 1 game. Too bad that game wasn't on the slate because DJ Carton and CJ Walker both had monster games, but you can't really pay 5-5, 5-4 for those guys with Washington and Muhammad expected back. You know, Caleb Wesson at 8-1 on the road, you're probably asking for trouble. I know Andre Weston is probably going to be appealing to people who look at game logs. He's only 5-2, and he's had 22, 30, 30, and 19. But again, Penn State is you know, not a really easy team to go against, especially on their floor. Lamar Stevens, and one thing about the struggles of Penn State is their prices have come down. Lamar Stevens 7-7, Mike Watkins 6-7, Mirion Jones 7K. I'm not really interested in any of those guys. If you need some salary relief, you do have Isaiah Brockington at 4-7. He never changes from that price. He does have a floor of 8, but he can get you 20-22. So you have him there as an option. If Penn State decides to start Seth Lundy again, who's 4K, he started against Minnesota, played 26 minutes. Had 15-5-2 for 25 fantasy points, and he is there at 4K. So if he ends up starting again, you know, they did lose that game, but you could potentially use him at 4K. This game just, I don't really know how to read this one, Johnny. I don't like it for fantasy, and I really don't think that it's probably wise to bet it. But somebody has to win the game, right? Two struggling teams. Who do you think is going to win this game?
Okay, so Walter, I'm not betting it. But I'm gonna give people an insight on my angles and stuff. This would fit into this criteria. First of all, these Big Ten home dogs have absolutely been smashing teams at home. And I referenced Purdue beating Michigan State by like almost beating the brakes off them to that point. But here's the thing. This is a classic revenge game. I mean, you have to ask yourself a question when you're betting this shit, Walter. Ohio State, you know, beat Penn State 86-74, beat them by 32. So you look at that first game, and you're like, oh, boy, okay. So that maybe they have something, matchup to whatever the case may be against them. Here's the issue with that. The spread is 1. I've been made a fool before, Walter, but I'm not a fucking idiot. There's no fucking way in the world that I would bet Ohio State with your money tomorrow. If I had to bet it, it'd be Penn State or no play. I mean, I'm off the game, but Penn State's probably going to win just because that line tells you something's off.
Yeah, and Big Ten in general has been really difficult to win on the road. Big Ten teams are actually 36-6 in conference at home. Rob mentioned this in Twitter DM earlier. So they're 36-6. So if you had been betting home money lines this whole time in Big Ten conference, you'd be making yourself a shit ton of money, that's for sure. But this is really a no-fly zone. I think for GPP purposes, that price on Mike Watkins at 6-7 is really appealing, but they're not getting it done. And there very well could be someone in this game who ends up, you know, going off, but it screams fade for me. There's more appealing games on this slate. North Carolina versus Pittsburgh. This is going to be a really interesting game. There's talk of Cole Anthony. He's not going to be back for this one, but it sounds like he's going to make a return here at some point in the next, you know, couple weeks potentially. A lot of the talking heads, you know, they thought he wasn't going to return, kind of the Zion talk of, well, he's going to be a top draft pick. Why come back, get further injury, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But he wants to play. So North Carolina, this KenPom projection on this, Pittsburgh 70-65. North Carolina's 45th in tempo ranking, so they're still playing super fast. Pittsburgh super slow, 330th. Right off the bat for North Carolina, you know, Cole Anthony's not going to play. Brennan Robinson is questionable to play. That's major. If he doesn't play, you know, he was in a car accident last week, so that's serious, you know, business. This is a guy who's been, you know, scoring 20-plus points and 20-plus fantasy points, kind of filling in there for Cole. If he doesn't play, you got to definitely look at 4-1 Andrew Playtech. He played 39 minutes in the Clemson game. He had 30 fantasy points, 8-8-6 with 2 steals. I don't know that we can expect, you know, that type of repeat performance, but at 4-1 with, you know, the next option, we talked about Isaiah Brockington in the last game, I'd much rather pay 4-1 for Playtech. On the road against Pittsburgh is not an easy task, but if Robinson is out and Playtech's going to get, you know, 30-plus minutes, it's really hard not to play him. Jeremiah Francis is also questionable for North Carolina. He missed that game against Clemson, so he's got some, you know, sore knee tendonitis, it sounds like. So they're down him. K.J. Smith, they're down. Anthony Harris is out. You know, they're down a lot of bodies still. So that's why Playtech looks like, you know, the play. Leaky Black had been a nice play under 5K for the last couple of weeks, but now he's 5K. I'm not really that interested in him. And my nice little buy low spot still, Armando Bacot, I was on him last game at 6-8 against Clemson. I think you can go back to him at 6-9. It is a little concerning on the road because he does have foul issues there. But, again, they're going to have to look to him a lot. He's a little better at home, but I think he's certainly playable, especially in tournaments. So Bacot and Playtech are the two that I like. Garrison Brooks at 8-2 is a little bit too high for me. Pittsburgh's actually looked really good, Johnny. Trey McGowan's has been a revelation. Last year he would have games of 40, then he'd have games of 12. And now he's really been quite consistent the last three, 36, 33. And then the last time he played North Carolina on the 8th, on their floor, he had 51 fantasy points and a 73-65 win. So these teams already played, you know, just a couple of weeks ago. McGowan's just exploded. So at 6-8, I'm certainly going to be looking at him again. Justin Champagne, he had 41 against them. He's had 30 after that against Miami and then 33 against Louisville at 6-5. He's back in play again. You know, got Xavier Johnson at 7-2. I would much rather play the two cheaper guys. Johnson's just been kind of, you know, struggling a little bit. He had 24 against North Carolina, then 11 against Miami, and 30 against Louisville, which is good, but you don't really need to pay that premium price above McCowan's and Chambagni when you got those guys. Audie's Tony is back. He's 4-8, so another value guy playing roughly 30 minutes. You know, he had 17 against Louisville, which is fine at 4-8. I think he's definitely playable. We're not playing Eric Hamilton or Terrell Brown, we've decided, because Coach Capel just kind of gives them 15 minutes each, and that's about what they get, 15 and 20, and they just can't get anything done in that time. And then Ryan Murphy at 5-3, I'm not really interested in him at that price either. He's had games of 35-plus fantasy points, but his floor is below 10. I'm not going to pay that for him. North Carolina down another score. Let's just assume that Brandon Robinson is too injured from the car accident to play. They're going to get wrecked here, right? They're going to get, I mean, that's poor terminology by me. Let me not use that word after talking about a car accident. But they're going to get beat pretty handily here by Pittsburgh, I assume.
Here's the thing, Walter. I cannot back North Carolina there under any circumstance. I just think they're a bad basketball team. I understand the injuries, but that team stinks. There's no way around the fact that that team is just not very good. I know Pitt beat them in North Carolina. This would be where the revenge game thing comes into play a little bit here, but North Carolina just don't have the horses. If Cole Anthony was playing, I would feel a lot better about North Carolina's chances in this particular situation, but he's not. So it'd either be Pitt or no bet for me. But, I mean, again, I'm going to pick and choose my battles here, but like I said, I did notice what the line was there. It's 4.5, so it's actually not as bad as it could be.
Yeah, I got to imagine people will pound that if Robinson gets ruled out, because you're down Cole Anthony, you're down Harris, you're down Manley, Francis potentially, and then Robinson. It's just not a good situation for them. All right, next game we're going to go to is Baylor versus Oklahoma State. This is a game. Baylor is projected to win on KenPom 66-59. They're 259th in Temple ranking. Oklahoma State 161st. Baylor has had very safe options. I say that one guy that hurt us the other day, and he should have been super safe in that matchup against Iowa State, was Macy Oteague. He shot 0-for-7 from the field, played 32 minutes, had 16.5 fantasy points. And this is a guy with, you know, two of his last three before that have 30 fantasy points or more. So I wanted to bring up that safe in college basketball this year really hasn't been a thing. Variance has been very high. Just today, for example, Xavier Simpson had 18 fantasy points, and he's been rattling off 35-plus over the last five. So really tough to use any of the Baylor guys here. Oklahoma State isn't that good of a basketball team, but at home they've been able to hold their own, and they've done good defensively. So I definitely, you know, I'm not targeting Teague here. I'm probably not going to play Jared Butler, except maybe in some GPPs because he has that 40-point upside. Davion Mitchell at 5'5 does have appeal, but I feel like him and Teague are just, they're not going to go off together. You see Mitchell had 31 last game. It's just one of those situations where one or the other, and I don't feel confident enough in this matchup to really try and guess. I always like Freddie Gillespie. I think he's fine for tournament plays, but I'm really not going to be on any Baylor guys, and I'm certainly not going to be on Oklahoma State guys just because of the pace of this one. Yoren Nye's minutes are seemingly disappearing. He's dropped all the way down to 6'3 on DraftKings after being 7'5 for a lot of the part of the year. You see two fantasy points, 15, 5, 6. He's not a usable player right now. And Oklahoma State has been using a lot more, the Boone brothers, Avery Anderson, Chris Harris, those guys, all the younger guys who are on the bench, they're getting more minutes at the expense of Anai, at the expense of Disagawa. McGriff is even dipped down a little bit to the mid-20s. So it's really difficult to use any Oklahoma State because last year they were a really short, 5, 6, 7 player rotation, and this year they're running 10-plus guys. So this is just not a fun game to bet, not a fun game to play anyone in. Just, it's pretty much an avoid for me. Is this one on your radar for betting, or is you kind of in the same boat as me?
Well, I'm in the same boat because, I mean, I want to reference Baylor because they're a lot better than I thought they were going to be, honestly. And, Walter, I need to reference your NCAA net rankings. Baylor is ranked number one on those things, by the way.
They got good wins. They have very good wins.
Well, you want to know who's number 9?
Especially. Who's that? Stanford?
Yeah, how the... I mean, I'm not understanding all this. I mean, I understand that we're really good defensively, but how the hell are we number 9 anywhere?
Just the schedule and the wins, man. It carries a lot of weight. Like Baylor's win over Butler, just that's gonna carry a lot of weight for them. And Stanford is as long as they keep winning these the games they're supposed to, they're gonna hang around. It's wild because yeah, I thought it was gonna be a rebuilding year for them too. All right, let's go to the next game here: Florida State versus Miami. Florida State is on the road. KenPom projection on this one is 75-69 for Florida State. Miami 216th in tempo ranking. Florida State is 149th. I heard you groan there, but stick with me here because this is going to be a good one for DFS purposes. Miami's defense has been absolutely atrocious on the perimeter, mediocre on the wing, and pretty average down low. So you can really target anyone against Miami and feel pretty good about it. Now, we know with Florida State, they play a lot of guys. Leonard Hamilton, he's a big fan of the 10-plus rotation. But at this point, we know that Trent Forrest is going to get a bunch of minutes. He is one of the guys who is going to play 30-plus minutes. He's been really, really consistent, 33, 38, 34, 26. He's looked really good. He contributes in all categories. He's a very safe floor player. Now, I know I just got done saying there is really no such thing, but if we're going to assume there is, Trent Forrest is pretty much the closest thing you can get to it. At 6'3", just under him, is Devin Vassell, another guy on Florida State, one of the few who's getting over 30 minutes. He also has four straight 30 fantasy point games. So Vassell and Forrest are two guys I absolutely love. I'm certainly going to have a ton of both of them. I think you can run both on FanDuel, although it's a little harder at 6'8", 6'7", but it's definitely doable. DraftKings, I love both. Now you go underneath there, you got MJ Walker at 4'8". He's pretty decent tournament play because, you know, he's roughly been getting 25 to 30 minutes also. He's not a cash play because of his 7 floor, but he has 30-point upside as well. Down at 4-5, a forward, Malik Osborne. He's somebody who, if he stays out of foul trouble, he's been popping off with about 20 to 22 fantasy points at 4-5-2. I like him for tournaments as well. So a lot more than you would think, Johnny, of these FSU guys are playable. Yeah. Now, I don't know if you have the line handy or not, but FSU, I think money line for sure is a strong bet. Because I don't like really any of the Miami guys or Miami in this game, obviously. But how are you seeing this one?
Well, Walter, they're laying 5.5. I mean, the only reason why I groan for DFS purposes is because me and you both know Leonard Hamilton is going to play as many guys on his bench as he possibly can. That would be why I groan. But as we both know, Miami can't defend anybody. So, you know, I mean, I don't hate taking Florida State players in a matchup like this. I don't like the way Leonard Hamilton uses his team. That's all.
Yeah, but Forrest and Vassell, those two, you can use those guys. Now, on Miami side of things, we got to take note because DK is just not pricing him up from 4-4, Rodney Miller, he started last game, he's been starting, he played two straight games of 30-plus minutes, three of the last four he's played 29-plus minutes, 13-9 in those two games, but against Pitt he had 21 fantasy points, NC State was terrible down low. He had 26 fantasy points. Now, FSU is not a good matchup for him, but he is at home. He is only 4-4. I think that game log, you know, chasers are obviously going to be using him, but this is another guy in the value realm that you know, next to Playtech that are you could really probably just plug right in and then build around those guys because a balanced build will work today. But I think that you can also, you know, pay up for a guy like Marcus Howard or Omar Year 7 against Marquette easily with these value guys. So Miller is the only one from Miami that I would be interested in using. It just doesn't make sense for his price to be there at 4-4. He should be, you know, over 5K at this point. And on FanDuel, he's 4-4 too. So both of those guys in play. Next game here is Auburn versus Florida. This might be the trap of the century here. I believe, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that Auburn is +1, +1.5, somewhere in there. KenPom has it 70-69 in favor of Florida. Auburn, we know they're 82nd in tempo ranking. Very fast. Florida is 29th for whatever reason. Mike White just will not run with them. Auburn's not amongst the undefeated anymore. They got shellacked by Alabama on Alabama's floor. So they're going to be playing a little bit angry here. Samir Dowdy had one of the worst games of his career. I think he had like 4 fantasy points or something like that. Florida also, you know, they're not playing. They're 11-5. I have a future on them. We thought they would be better. They did have a nice win over Ole Miss, 71-55. But against Missouri, just the game before that, they got shelled. the big thing about Florida is their defense just hasn't been what we thought. Some games, you know, they have this reputation of being a super good defense. Some of the efficiency numbers show that they can be. But they really have been giving up some big scores to fantasy players.
If Auburn
was at home here, I would be really willing to target guys like Austin Wiley or a bounce back from Doughty or McCormick or even Isaac Okoro, who I still think is a little too cheap at 6'5". But the fact that they're on the road, the fact that Coach Pro likes to play, you know, 9, 10, 11 guys, it's a little tougher spot for me to want to use the Auburn guys. I think they're wonderful tournament plays. I think you can use any of their starting five and feel okay about it because Florida does get beat up on, and this could be an overtime situation. It's just really hard to decipher which ones to use. For Florida, you know, Key Johnson, Kerry Blackshear, those guys are all nice. Noah Locke I don't really use. He's too priced up. Andrew Nembhard didn't practice today because of an illness, but he's probably going to play tomorrow. If he doesn't play tomorrow, there's going to be some big value with Trey Mann. You know, Noah Locke, obviously you can bump up there. Quace Glover, it was another guy. So there's going to be some value on Florida if Nembhard misses. Scotty Lewis is going to become an elite play. So keep that in mind. That's news we will have to watch for. That is after the first set of games. Very, very important. Nembhard, if he misses this game, I would go Scotty Lewis. I would then go Trey Mann, Keith Glover, and then Noah Locke. I probably am underrating Noah Locke, but at 5'3", even without Nembhard, I have trouble with him because he is very dependent upon his scoring. Is this a trap line for betting, Johnny? What do you think here?
Here's the thing. Florida looks like the right side, but here's the issue I have. Florida can't defend the three very well. There's no fucking way in the world that you could justify allowing 91 points to a Missouri team that is one of the bottom feeders of the SEC. I understand that it was on the road, but that game against Missouri was a pathetic effort on Mike White's part. And if I had to do it, I would bet Florida because of this. Just like Duke against Clemson was a complete and total look ahead, that Missouri game was a complete and total look ahead for the game that they're playing on Saturday. Metrics has Florida losing by 1 to Auburn. So if I had to do it, I would bet Florida, but just know that I'm not thrilled with their perimeter defense, and I'm really not thrilled that they just gave up almost 100 points to a Missouri team that I think absolutely sucks.
Yeah, and important to note that last game that Florida did win against Ole Miss, they brought Scotty Lewis off the bench and started the 6'10 freshman Omar Payne, who has really been a great player off the bench and solid, you know, low minutes, but he's been pretty decent usage and a really good rebounding rate. So Payne is a potentially another value guy you can use. You know, he's been getting more and more solid minutes, and the fact that he got to start over Scotty Lewis is pretty big. He does have a 25% combined rebounding rate right now in conference. Total 30%, 25% in conference, 13% offensive rebounding rate in conference, which is best for 7th, and an 8% block rate, which is 7th in the SEC as well. He is just 4.3. So there's lots of potential value on Florida if you get it right. We are going to need that Nembhard news. Again, Auburn guys are on play for tournaments. Wiley at 7.5 is a really tough ask at that price. I love Austin Wiley. I own him in Dynasty. He's just going to play 20 minutes. He's going to get anywhere from 18 to 30 fantasy points. But he's just 7.5. You can't pay that. We just can't pay it, unfortunately. Next game here is pretty ugly. Purdue versus Maryland. I say pretty ugly because both teams have had games where their offense looks amazing, defense looks great, but then they've had games where they've looked absolutely atrocious, and you can never count out Matt Painter. Matt Painter's a great coach. Purdue is 10-7. You know, they've lost, two out of the three overtime games they've played. Two out of their last five have been double OT, so they've been getting ran ragged a bit. Ken Palm projection on this is Maryland 62-58. Purdue very slow, as always, 344th in tempo ranking. Maryland 179th. One thing that has been a revelation is Trevion Williams, who's priced at 6'7 now, Johnny. You remember the days of him being 4'5 and 4'6. he's actually avoiding foul trouble somehow and getting minutes. The problem with him, he's always had a high usage rate, always produced fantasy points at a high, you know, per minute very highly. But he was always in foul trouble. Now that he's not, he plays 44 minutes against Michigan, had 68 fantasy points, 36 points, and 20 rebounds, which we know by now we can target Michigan in the post. We did it again today with Iowa. But T. Will is one of the more premier tournament plays of this slate. I think he will probably go under the radar a little bit because there are so many juicy matchups on this slate, but you definitely can't ignore him. Even the game against Michigan State where I thought he might regress a bit, and obviously you're going to regress coming off of 68, but he still had 32 fantasy points, 16, 7, and 4 with a steal. So as far as Purdue plays go, T. Will is one of my only ones. I know Sasha Stefanovic just had a 27. He's not very good on the road. He's had his trouble shooting the ball on the road. I like to use him at home mostly, but he's 5'5 now, and I really have to be sure about it. You know, Harms is there at 6'2, Hunter at 5'8. Proctor, who started out the year really well, kind of a non-con hero at 5'6. There's really no one besides T. Will from Purdue that I want. Now, for Maryland, we know they start slow. We know that they are, you know, the tilt of the world. Dont'a Scott has really been the only one I've personally been comfortable using the last couple of slates. And even him, I don't really want to use. You know, in the game against Wisconsin, he had 10 fantasy points only. But his minutes are starting to get pretty secure. And he is there as a, you know, an alt, you know, if you're doing mass multi-entry, you know, value guy to kind of shift around. Because there's some other obvious value that we've already talked about and will talk about. But Scott's there if you need him. But I'm not using Jalen Smith. I'm not using Cowan. I'm not using Wiggins. I'm just not using the Maryland guys, man. Cowan is somebody who I don't want to swear off somebody. I don't know how you could be using Anthony Cowan Jr. in DFS at this point. Is this a bettable game, Johnny? It looks horrible.
Walter, I won't be on it. And you want me to tell you what the total is? And
sure.
I reference the total because for TFS purposes, when you hear a total like this, you turn the other way. The total in this game is set at 122.
Yikes.
Yeah, I wouldn't be taking Purdue on the road, though. This is a game I'm not going to – I mean, unless I see a live bet on it where – I see if something that's doable, there's no way I will be betting this game.
Yeah, no, it's ugly all around. There's much better matchups here. We are going to get into one, Marquette versus Georgetown. Georgetown has been one of the favorite targets in DFS because they're a short rotation. You know, Ewing doesn't have the players at his disposal to play a bunch. They're also, you know, fantasy friendly, and they're playing a team that's very fantasy friendly. Marquette is projected on KenPom to lose this. Actually, Georgetown 79-77. Georgetown is they're 32nd in tempo ranking. Marquette 27th. This is going to be a very fun game. Usually, we'll want to use Marcus Howard at home. You know, he's 8-8 on DraftKings, but you don't want to shy away from using him here. If there's one pay up and one pay up only that you're going to use tomorrow on this main slate, make sure it's Marcus Howard. Georgetown just doesn't have the chops to guard him. He's going to pop 40 fantasy points with upside for 50 plus. So get him in there. I definitely like who else for Marquette, Brendan Bailey. I think that he's going to have a really nice game. He's coming off a couple mediocre games, and he only played 20 minutes against Xavier. It's going to be a nice bounce back spot for him. Expect 30-plus minutes, and I think he's going to pay off that 5-5 tag, so I'm looking to get him in there. And then at 5-8, Sakara Nim, he's been playing heavy minutes. Three of the last four, he's been over 36 minutes. Prices, you know, come down a little bit from when it was up at 6-5, which you couldn't pay that, so I definitely am looking at him there. Kane and John McEwen are all just, you know, okay plays. And maybe if you think Theo John's going to get in foul trouble at 3-9, you could use Jace Johnson, who has been doing pretty well lately. The last three games, he's been 8-plus rebounds and right around 15 fantasy points. So he would pay off the 3-9 at that mark if you want to give him a shot. For Georgetown, we know Mac McClung, high usage rate, high shot rate. Since Akinju's been gone, he's just been, you know, absolutely killing. At 7-6, Marquette, it doesn't have the chops to really guard him either. So this could be a really nice tournament spot where you roll Howard and McClung together and let them just battle it back and forth. I could see a situation where those guys combine, you know, for 100 points rather easily. So I like McClung for tournaments. Omar Yurtseven had a really nice get-right game. Creighton, anytime you play Creighton, you want to target the big men. Yurtseven had 47 fantasy points against Creighton. They don't have the interior to deal with a load like him. Now he's back at home against Marquette, where they have Theo John, they have Jace Johnson. They have some bodies to throw at him, so I do have my concerns about fouls for him even at home. I think he's a fine play, but he's just not a slam dunk like he was against Creighton. I do like Jamarco Pickett. He's 5'9". The price is maybe a little too high for me to use in cash, but I definitely like him for tournaments. Terrell Allen is there at 5'4". Jagan Mosley, Javon Blair, pretty much any of the Georgetown guys, you know, they're a really short rotation now are in play for tournaments. But I think McClung and Howard is a really marquee matchup. I suppose if you look here, the total on this one would be super high. Do you have a lean either way for who's going to win it?
Well, the total is 156.5. Here, I do have a cardinal rule whenever I deal with Marquette. I refuse to bet Wojo on the road. The guy's a dope, okay? If I had to do it, I would bet Georgetown, but this is a game that you're going to see a shitload of points score in.
Yes, it's going to be a good one for DFS. I think that, you know, if you don't like to bet totals, like you said, that would make me nervous, but I think that they're going to clear the over on this. Now, looking over at FanDuel, price-wise, you know, Howard's there at 8.5. Your team is down at 7K on FanDuel, which is a lot easier price to swallow than the 8.7 they're asking on DraftKings. And McClung is only 6.4 on FanDuel, which is a little ludicrous. I think I'll certainly have quite a bit of McClung shares over on FanDuel for that reason. And Brendan Bailey down there at 5.5. So those are the guys I'm really keying in on. Let's go to Kansas versus Texas. Ken Pom has this Kansas 67, Texas 59. Kansas 232nd in tempo ranking, so they're slow. Texas 279th, two relatively slow teams. Devin Dotson, obviously he missed last game against Oklahoma, so we'll have to see. He's questionable for tomorrow against Texas. If he doesn't play, obviously we can look at Marcus Garrett again. We can look at Isaiah Moss again, Oshae Igbaji. All those guys had really killer games against Oklahoma. Moss had 29.5 at 4K. His price is only 4K, 4.4 now. You know, Texas doesn't scare me necessarily for defense. You know, this isn't their best Texas squad. So I definitely think that if Moss starts again, you can plug him in. We may not have that info right away at lock, so you're going to leave yourself room to swap. Igbaji really let me down, unfortunately. I don't think I'll be using much of him. He did play 38 minutes against Oklahoma, but Moss was just hitting shots and Ozabuki was just destroying Oklahoma. That Igbaji wasn't really needed. He did shoot the ball 11 times and only hit 3 of them, but his peripherals just weren't there, unfortunately. It's hard to pay the 6K for him there. And then Marcus Garrett at 5.9, which is closer to the price I don't want to pay. He's up 400. I think he's priced right about where his ceiling is for this game. So I think the only guy I'd really want to use would be Moss, and only if Dotson is out. And then for tournaments, I'm still okay with Buki. I know you're not a big Ozabuki fan. He's coming off of a game of 42, game before that 34, and two games before that 43, two of which were on the road. So Buki is going to have his hands full with, you know, Jericho Sims, Tamaka Hepa. I think he makes a really nice turning play, though. On the flip side, Kansas has been a targetable team in the past in the interior. I know on paper this would look like a tougher matchup for Texas, but they are at home. I do think Jericho Sims is a quote-unquote sneak play at 6'4". The last two games he's been under 25, so that's going to put people off of him. But you look at the game against Oklahoma and Baylor, 32 and 36. Before that, 33 and 30. So he does have that 30-point upside. I think this is a matchup where things break right. He could do well. Another potential popular value play will be Kamaka Hepa at 4.1. It doesn't make sense for him to only go up 200. His logs aren't that sexy. 24 fantasy points, 17, 18, and 14. But he's playing huge minutes. 31, 24, 19, and 29 over the last four since being inserted into the starting lineup. He should really be priced higher, you know, at this rate, 4.8, 4.9, something like that. So even though it's not a great play on paper, he's not a slam dunk like he's been in the past, He's 4-1. If you're building a tournament lineup that's, you know, superstars and scrubs, Hepa's got to be on your list. Fabrice, Ramey, Jones, all the Coleman, they're just kind of guys today. Not super into any of them. What's the word with Kansas, man? If Dodson's out, do you slam Texas, or what are you doing? All right, we lost Johnny there. That's all right. Too funny, man. Good old Johnny. All right, I think that we'll move on to the next game here, TCU versus Oklahoma. Man, this is going to be a tough game because Oklahoma has been really bad against pretty much all capable interior players. KenPom does have a 68-64 for Oklahoma. TCU's 285th in tempo ranking. Oklahoma is 71st. So they're playing very quick. First thing I want to look at is Kevin Samuel. His price is 7-6 on DraftKings. It's not going to be for the faint of heart type of play. His price really should have came down. But I think he bounces back here against Oklahoma. Like I said, we just witnessed Buki, crush them. Not saying Samuel's going to have that type of game. You know, he did have foul trouble against West Virginia. But I think that he's very capable player of bouncing back and having a high score, because he's shown in the past 38, 43, 30, 36. You know, he's a very, very high ceiling type of player. So I definitely like him. And then for Oklahoma, not a really great spot to use them here against TCU. It's a major pace down. Doolittle's priced at 8-6. He's priced, you know, only 200 cheaper than Marcus Howard. Doolittle does have nice, 30, 35 fantasy point upside, but do I want to pay that for him when I can go up 200 more and get maybe 60 from Howard? I don't think so. So Reeves, Manic, Harmon, Bieniemy, nobody on Oklahoma really strikes me as being as a good play. For TCU, back to them, Francisco Farabello was a guy that was a little bit of a darling, you know, fantasy play for us. Coming off the Oklahoma State game, he only got 17 minutes against West Virginia, 2 fantasy points. TCU is just, they can't be trusted. Edric Dennis, PJ Fuller, Grayer, Farabello, they all are kind of hot hands. If they're shooting well and playing well that game, they're going to get the minutes. If they're not, they're going to go right back to the bench. And we saw this with PJ Fuller, where he had 2 or 3 game stretch where he played really well, and then he got back to the bench, and we saw it with Farabello. It's a no-fly zone for all of them. The only TCU guy I would really seriously consider is Samuel. And if you're making many lineups, Desmond Bain is always worth a shot in one of your lineups. Looks like Johnny's back. His phone died, I guess. What's up, man? You back on the line here?
Yeah. So, here's the thing. You know how much I love my guy Manic, but there's not a time and a place for it. That is, I don't like the matchup.
Yeah, Manic, a.k.a. Larry Bird. Is that no, I want to circle back, too, because I lost you. You fell off the line. The Kansas game, is that a game you think that, like, if Dodson were to miss, do you think you could slam Texas there, or is it just kind of like that's going to be a steam situation and you want to stay away from it, or what are you thinking with that?
Well, here's the situation. Has Dodson been ruled out pretty much?
No, he's questionable, so he may play.
Yeah.
No new updates.
Well, here's what you got to ask yourself. Because this seems like a really important game for Shaka Smart and Co. Can Texas score enough to keep it within 7 points if Dotson's banged up? Because I'm looking at Texas as a whole here, Walter. And it hasn't been particularly – they don't strike me as particularly a good team. I think they're mediocre. I mean – arguably, the best game they put together was against Oklahoma State last week when they beat them by 12. They looked halfway decent there. But what else have they done? That's my issue with this. I mean, it seems like to me that Texas needs a win pretty badly, just to kind of, because I kind of have them playing like as a team that would be in like a playing game situation. So if Dotson don't play, does Texas have anyone who could take advantage of that? Anyone that sticks out saying, oh, this guy could put up 25 on us. Do they have anyone on their team like that, Walter?
No, that's a really good point, you know. Ramey and Coleman, I suppose, could, but not consistently. Certainly not anyone that you could look to and say, yeah, they're going to.
No, and that would be my issue here. I mean, I think Texas, this is one of these things where I wouldn't call it a make-or-break situation for them, because I'm looking at the record, Walter. They're 12-4. They're 8-1 at home. But the question that you have to ask yourself is, who have we beaten? I mean, and I'm looking at this, and does losing by 10 at home to Oklahoma strike confidence that they're going to rise up at home and beat Kansas if Dotson does not play? I don't think so.
Kansas is way better than I think people even realize, or Oklahoma's that bad, because they just went out to Oklahoma's floor without Dotson and beat him by double digits. So I don't know what that speaks to more.
No, and that's the problem. I couldn't justify taking Texas with the 7. And you know how much I love taking home dogs and money lining and stuff like that. But the problem being is, where is Texas going to score? Because they're not going to control the paint with Ozebuki sitting down there, even though you know how much I love him. Fucking guy. But I mean, this game's going to go one of two ways, Walter. If Texas can keep it close going into the second half, then maybe by some miracle they could pull the upset. But what I think's going to happen is, I don't think Texas is going to be able to score enough to win this basketball game. I don't think their offense is capable of it, because I'm looking at their point totals, Walter. I'm just going to go from when conference play started for them, Walter. They scored 44 against Baylor, which obviously Baylor's pretty good. So, okay, 44. Scored 62 against an Oklahoma team that can't play defense. I mean, they beat Kansas State, but Kansas State's not good. But they only scored 64. And the most points they've scored in conference so far was in their last game against Oklahoma State. They scored 76. But here's the thing, and this is what we're talking about in terms of consistency here. Walter, to get to that 76, they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys scoring double digits. Nobody scored 20 points. So, against a Kansas team that is pretty good defensively, are we banking on 5 Texas guys scoring double digits?
Yeah, no. It doesn't seem feasible. All right. Let's go. Colorado-Arizona, last game. Yeah, let's move on from that. Colorado-Arizona's last game on DraftKings. It is on FanDuel as well. KenPom has it 73-68 in favor of Arizona. Colorado is 138th in tempo ranking, and Arizona is 123rd. Arizona coming off of they just beat the brakes off of Utah 93-77. And Colorado had I want to call it a semi-surprising win over Arizona State, because it doesn't surprise me they beat Arizona. state, but it surprises me it was Colorado that did it, because usually on the road, Colorado has had a lot of issues. I do find it difficult to believe they're going to go to Arizona's court and win, especially after seeing the way Arizona just looked. DFS purposes, McKinley Wright is 8-2. There's no way I can pay that for him. 8-4 for Tyler Bay. Again, should I pay that, or do I go 400 more for Marcus Howard? Kind of a no-brainer for me. Beatty, I think, is priced out at 6K. We faded him last slate, and he only had 15, so we're fading him again. Schwartz is there at 5-7, Gatling at 4K, Seward at 5. There's just really no one on Colorado that strikes me as a play. For Arizona, Zeke Najee is just, you know, that guy's a killer. He's been really good. He's been kind of an auto 30. He's priced right around where his ceiling usually is. Guy's a 32% combined rebounding rate. A true shooting percentage of 71.2, which is third in the country. 4% block rate. You know, he's an 80% free throw shooter, which I know you can appreciate for a 6'11", 240 guy. He just does a little bit of everything. I really like him. You got Nico Mannion and Josh Green, 6'5 and 6'8. Both guys are playable. Now, Chase Jeter missed last game. Black back spasms. You guys know spasms can be tricky. Sounds like he's going to try to play, but, you know, he can very easily get pulled right away. Stone Gettings did get to start over Jeter, and he became a semi-popular play. I stayed off of him just because I hadn't seen enough from him in the minutes he was playing. You know, he's been playing 15 to 20 anyways. He played 28 against Utah. He had 7-2-2 with a steal, 14.5 fantasy points at 3-9, which is fine. I just don't think he really has the ceiling you're going to need on this particular slate. You're going to have to score a lot of points on this slate. With some of these other matchups, and I'm not seeing it from Gettings here. Max Hazard was a surprise, though. This guy's 4K. He played 17 minutes only against Utah and was red freaking hot.
Yep. That's what he does, Walter.
Now, Irvine last year, he did this quite often. He just hasn't had the chance for Arizona yet because it's so logjammed at guard. It's kind of odd that he even went there as a grad transfer. I don't know if he thought they were going to have less people or what. But he finally got a little bit of minutes and got hot. Now, I don't advocate using him at 4K here because he only played 17 minutes. You'd have to be super efficient again to pay it off. If you want to use a value guy for Arizona and you're hell-bent on it, Jamal Baker has been more consistent, but he doesn't really excite me. And then Dylan Smith is the ultimate kill, 4-9. No way in hell I'm going to pay that for him. He's coming off a 32 fantasy point game, too, where he was 5-11 in the field, had 6 assists and 5 rebounds at 12 points. He's capable of putting up a 7. So Arizona, I don't know if you know, they're now going to be experimenting with a deeper rotation. Seems like Miller's starting to give guys, you know, Iro Lee, Matt Hazard, Christian Colocolo, who's a real talented shot-blocking big man who gets 3 minutes. It just seems like Arizona's a little on the deep side this year. And for fantasy purposes, it makes it difficult. And Josh Green had a really nice first half last game, like 25 at the half. You know, he can only manage 4 or 5 more fantasy points after that for 29. And his price is 6.5. So he's not as great of a play as he was last week. Definitely one of the better Arizona plays for a price point type of thing. What do you think, man? Betting Colorado's got to be super tough because, like I said, they had road woes, but they really looked good against Arizona State. I think it's just Arizona State. So is Arizona on the right side to take here or what?
No, here's how I decide for this, Walter. I like Arizona money line to win, and I'll explain why. Because Colorado has been known to struggle on the road in conference, which kind of seems like their MO since they've been in the Pac-12, I think they're happy to get a split going into the desert. I wouldn't lay the 6 with Arizona just because I don't need to, because I could moneyline Zona and find another game or two to link with it, especially on a Saturday when there's so many games. I just think it's a situation where if Colorado wins at Arizona, it's a fucking bonus. But do you think Colorado is going to be able to rise up? Because the thing is, and I like Tad Boyle. I think he's a good coach. I just think that Arizona, after watching them against Utah and how good they looked against them, I just don't see how Colorado goes in there after they beat Arizona State, which is, here's the thing, Colorado knew they had to beat Arizona State because that was the easier game that they had. Going into the McHale Center, which is a nightmare for most visiting teams normally, it's just not a situation where I think Colorado is going to be able to rise up and go in there and get a win. So if Colorado was able to even play close, then that would be kind of, I'm not saying that's great that they played them close and lost, but it's just something where I'm not expecting Colorado to go on the road in conference and win back-to-back games when they haven't been good on the road historically in conference, though.
No, I like that. All right, there is a couple games on FanDuel I do want to run through real quick. Seton Hall versus St. John's is not on DraftKings. KenPom has a Seton Hall 73-68 over St. John's. Seton Hall 108th in KenPom ranking. St. John's 20th. So this will be another game with a ton of points. We know Miles Powell. He's there at 8K. He's a good pairing partner with Marcus Howard if you can afford him. One thing I've been doing whenever St. John's is on the slate is just semi-stacking against them. So Powell's a great play. Gill's fine. McKnight has played really well. But I don't know if I'm going to be able to play all of them on this particular slate. St. John's, they're all priced pretty correct, so I'm probably not going to use any of them. What do you think about betting on this one?
Well, if there's going to be a lot of points scored, here's the thing. And this is how you have to ask yourself this. Do you understand why St. John's can't play defense? You figure that part out yet. You figure that out, right? Why, how the hell they're that bad defensively? Do you know why that is?
Tell us.
Because Mike Anderson's an idiot, and that's who their coach is. Mike Anderson has never been a defensive coach everywhere he's gone. He plays that bullshit fucking prep, and he likes to play street ball. He runs and guns. So that's just the way it is, Walter. But I think Miles Powell is going to go absolutely nuts in that game. I don't know what he's priced at. I'm sure it's high, but do you think Mike Anderson's going to have any plans on stopping him under any circumstances?
No, that's all year long. Like I said, St. John's has been a really good target. All right, next game, Butler versus DePaul. Ken Palm had a 67-63 favor of Butler. They're 326 in tempo ranking. DePaul is 81st. DePaul's starting to slide, man. People were like, whoa, Paul, you know, they had wins over Minnesota. They beat Texas Tech in OT. They had a decent win over Northwestern, but they've got four losses in a row, Seton Hall, Providence, St. John's, and Nova. I don't foresee them beating Butler even at home. So, unfortunately, you know, DePaul, they're sliding, and they were becoming a little bit of a possible turn darling. It is tough, though, because, you know, Paul Reed's been really good. Charlie Moore's been really good. But the 8-7 for Paul Reed on FanDuel against Butler, I mean, I don't know. Moore at 7-8, Jalen Buss at 6-2. They have good players, but against Butler where they've been able to really, you know, instill their will against teams and make it slow and play, you know, hard-nosed basketball. Mar Baldwin at 6-8 against DePaul is very appealing. You know, NZ, McDermott, those are all just guys. Jordan Tucker's down that 4-3. Tucker's really becoming, you know, a reliable option. He's finally breaking through. He's played 30 minutes, 23, and 29 the last three. He had a double-double against Seton Hall with 14, 10, and 1, 25 fantasy points. Game before that against Providence, he had 17 and 6 for 23. So at 4-3 against DePaul, I think I'll be going back to Jordan Tucker there on FanDuel. I think he's fine rewarding our patience for us DFS players who have used him time and time again at that 4-5 and 4-6 and 4-8 tag. I think he might have arrived finally. He's finally getting minutes too because Butler needs offense. McDermott's gone cold a little bit, so they're definitely using him. And then the last game here on FanDuel is UConn versus Villanova. This is pretty decent. Villanova, you know, they're winning games. Jay Wright's a great coach. They're 13-3. They're right back where they should be. But defensively, they haven't been quite the same team. So while they're winning, they're giving up fantasy points, and that's really all we care about, right? KenPom has a 72-63 in favor of Villanova. They're 283rd in tempo ranking. And then UConn is 219th. Now, UConn has, you know, more potential value guys going on here. They did have, you know, Pauly out for the year, Boozney out. They did start James Booknight. He's only 4-3 on FanDuel. He started last game, you know, he rewarded his fantasy owners. If you use him, I believe it's like 4-5, 4-6 somewhere on DraftKings. 27.7 fantasy points against Wichita State. So another guy that you can use in value on FanDuel. I think Booknight will be really popular, you know, even on the road against Villanova. Again, like I said, they've been giving up a lot of fantasy points. I have no issues using him there. Don't really have a lot of interest in any of the other UConn guys. I did luck box out a little bit and use Sid Wilson on DraftKings last week. He is 3-9 on FanDuel, came off the bench. I believe that game went to overtime, so he played 25 minutes and had 20 fantasy points. So he's another guy for tournaments where he won't be nearly as owned as Booknight, but he's definitely in play for tournaments because of the fact that he's kind of a high-energy, instant offense guy that does a little bit of everything. Now, Villanova guys are pretty cheap. Sadiq Bey, 6'6", Gillespie, 6'4", Jermaine Samuels, 6'2". All three of those guys for Villanova are in play. UConn hasn't really impressed me that much on the defensive end. I think this game might go a little under the radar, low-key, because of the other matchups. It's not on DraftKings, and I think that we can get a lot of, you know, good fantasy performances out of these guys. Just kind of wrapping up the slate there, why don't you tell me a little bit, you know, good time to look at it, everything. What bets, you know, you've talked about certain games here or there, but what bets are you seeing that you're kind of zoning in on? Or what money line, parlays, lines, what are you seeing out there for betting?
I'm going to be in Arkansas, Walter. I'm pretty much going to be on Pitt. Now, here's the question I have for you, and I just have to ask you, because, Walter, we're getting into that territory where it's like, holy shit, are we starting to treat Stanford on DFS as you would start treating Virginia defensively, or fucking Michigan when Beeline had whoever he had as his assistant coach who just preached defense, or that SMU?
We're getting to that point. We're definitely getting there because they're not giving up big fantasy scores. I've been forcing guys against them, and they're not rewarding me. So we are definitely trending that way.
I mean, well, here's the thing. I haven't figured out whether I'm betting them or not tomorrow. I mean, the spreads, too. Here's the thing. I know USC should have an advantage inside with the Russian down there and the big brother they have down there, but here's the problem. Do you trust USC's guards against Stanford's guards? Because I saw Tyrell – me and you were, Walter, the thing is, me and you were both waiting for Terry to look comfortable in conference play. Walter, that arrived. When I saw his stats, I thought it was pretty funny. Here's the thing. Do you think USC stopping my point guard?
No, there's going to be – Stanford should control that game. You know, the big thing for Stanford is, you know, DeSilva's banged up. You said Spencer Jones is banged up, and I think that might be the only thing that hurts them, because Onyeka, Okongwu, and Rakovic, you know, both those guys are capable of, you know, DeSilva's not playing or he's banged up, of just completely tearing them up. And that can neutralize, you know, the guard side of things. And then Akron grad transfer Daniel Otomi, he was shooting lights out last game. So now you got another aspect for USC where they can kind of play inside out. Not saying they're going to win and they're not a great team, but they do have the offensive firepower to stick it to them if Stanford's not healthy. If you guys are full strength, I don't think it's a contest.
The thing that worries me there is this. Do you trust Andy Enfield under any circumstance?
No, of course not.
I mean, it's weird, Walter, because it spreads too. I mean, I'm going to figure out who's playing for Stanford, who's not. Oh, Walter, I'm going to throw out my weird game of the day tomorrow, Walter. And this is always good for listeners because they're going to look at this and they're going to reference this. And, Walter, me and you are probably going to be on them tomorrow. So I like Richmond laying the 2 tomorrow against George Mason.
Okay, that's a good one.
Well, Walter, Richmond, they're actually kind of flying under the radar a little bit here. They're, I don't know, Walter, what they've done. They're 13-4. They're 8-1 at home, 4-1 on the road. Let me take a look at what they've done recently. Has a 5.5-point dog. They went wire to wire and beat Davidson and Davison. I've seen a lot worse teams in this one, Walter, and I'm looking at what George Mason has done lately. It hasn't been pretty, Walter. I mean, they started off the non-conference really well, and then they got into conference play, and all of a sudden, they were 11-2 when conference play started, Walter. They're now 12-5. So conference games have not been good to them. And I know Richmond, no matter if they're good or not, they could always shoot the ball from the outside. So that's the weird game I'm leaning tomorrow.
What do you think about – okay, let's talk about Pac-12 for a second again. What do you think about Washington State, man, beating Oregon? Oregon has historically, in the Altman era, struggled on that floor. I did notice before a lock that sharp money seemed to be pounding the Washington State side. I thought, no way. But they won, and they won pretty handily. What do you think about that?
Yeah. Well,
it's just like – because they always struggle there. They win, but they struggle there for some reason.
Well, Walter, I saw the line move. Oregon opened up in that game as an 11.5-point favorite, and the line hijacked down. When I saw that, I almost took Washington State with the 9.5 or whatever the fuck it was. And, Walter, we have a line movement. USC was a 2-point favorite. It's down to 1. Okay. So, that tells me all the Stanford guys are playing.
Okay.
That's what that told me. We got to talk about another game, Walter. And it's a line read. Do me a favor. Read. Let me know what Ken Palm says about this. Indiana was a 7.5-point favorite on the road against Nebraska. Nebraska's now getting 5.5. I know they're not good. What does Ken Palm think the score is going to be?
75-69 for Indiana, to 6.
I like Nebraska with a 5.5.
Yeah, because you know what? Indiana has really kind of struggled on the road, actually. They haven't been tested on the road that much, but when they have, they've lost. They lost at Rutgers, they lost at Maryland. And then they lost at Wisconsin. So every road game they've played, they've lost. So I don't mind that bet.
No. I mean, I don't think Nebraska's very good, but, and Walter, I'm going to give you this just an easy game for me to figure out. Virginia's on the road against Georgia Tech, the spread's a pick 'em. I'm assuming Virginia is just that. I mean, I know Virginia isn't what they were last year. Do they just suck? Is that what we're getting at this year, or what's going on here?
Well, they can't score. The problem is they can't score. Last year they could at least score. They had lockdown defense, but if another team pushed in the score, what they had Kyle Gay, they had, you know, Ty Jerome, they had DeAndre Hunter, they had capable scorers. They don't got that this year. If a team starts scoring, they can't keep up. I mean, they lost to Boston College. Come on.
Well, Walter, Do you want to know what the total is in this game? Because I refuse to back Josh Pastner. I can't do it. But do you know how low the total is in this game?
It's got to be real low. 111.
Yeah.
Ken Palm thinks Georgia Tech's going to win by one, 54-53. And it's just because the fact that Virginia's on the road, and like I said, they don't have guys who can score. You know, Diakite is obviously, he can hit the mid-range jumper, but, you know, Braxton Key's not really a scorer. The guys they brought in, you know, Casey Morcell, he can't score. Tomas Walden, Penn State, the transfer, he can't score. Cody Statman can't score. They don't have anyone who can score the ball. They can't wait for the Hauser kid to come aboard next year. I can tell you that.
Walter, another game I kind of like with the points anyway, I like Vanderbilt against Tennessee tomorrow with the 4.5. I just think Tennessee's not good enough to be a 4.5 road favorite. And
both those teams are horrible, man. Vanderbilt without Aaron Naismith, who's done for the year with an injury, those are really poor teams. That's going to be an awful game to watch.
Well, the total's 136, okay? Rick Barnes does not have a good team this year, okay?
No, Lamonte Turner couldn't go. He had to leave. He had to basically retire from college basketball because of an injury. So, obviously, we see how that hurts them. We see Vanderbilt. Both teams have lost their best player. So, the level of ineptitude that we'll see tomorrow is going to be very high.
Walter, I might have to record that game just to see how ugly it looks. We got to talk about the other game here. Oregon and Washington, Walter.
I was just about to ask you, where are you betting that? What are you doing with that game? Because my dogs looked good the other night, my brother, without Jaden McDaniels.
Well, you smacked Oregon State in the mouth, which I was surprised how easily you beat them, because I was worried about their white center dominating you inside without McDaniels especially. And I was worried about Trey Tinkle going absolutely nuts, and you shut that shit down. It surprised me. Well, the thing is, what the zone worked on them because the Thompson and their other guards, they couldn't buy a shot from outside. So the zone fucked them up. The question is here, can your zone fuck up Pritchard? Because, Walter, it's a skinny-ass line. Washington's getting two on – they're getting 2 points. Here's a question I got for you. Is McDaniels playing against Oregon? And
we don't know yet. It came out of nowhere, man, because he was right before lock. He was in the starting lineup. The game went lock on DFS sites, and then, you know, for start time, and then all of a sudden, oh, he's not actually in now. It was late, and he was late to warming up, and the you hurt the ankle at the end of the Cal game, and no one really talked about it. There was no news about it. It was all low-key, and then all of a sudden, he was out. And I've been waiting for my man Raekwon Battle to get minutes. I really like him. I watched him in high school, and he got minutes. And I don't know if you saw what he was doing, man, but he was knocking down threes. And the young kids for the Huskies came out, and I'm suddenly not feeling so horrible about the rest of the year like I was without – as soon as I got the Quad A Green news, I felt like, you know, my life was over kind of thing. Against the zone, though, Oregon has, you know, obviously Pritchard. Chris Duarte is a capable shooter. Mathis can sometimes shoot. But I don't know if you've seen what Duarte has been doing, but that guy is just killing it. So they have the bodies to do it. What really hurt the Huskies was, believe it or not, was Kyler Kelly. He kept getting in the teeth of the zone and hitting jump shots at the free throw line and the baseline, and they were really struggling to defend that. So if Oregon has a guy that they're going to run around the high post, baseline to baseline for, you know, mid-range jumpers, that's who's going to hurt them.
Yeah, no, that's who I meant. So, spread two. It's not exactly – I mean, everything's bettable, Walter, but that one looked – it comes down to the simple fact – can you
can you stop Oregon from shooting threes from the zone? If you can, you're good to go. If you can't, then that's where issues would happen.
Yeah, I'd love to see. They're going to have – I think we might have found a good point guard replacement for now in the youngster that they were going to redshirt, but had to use Marcus Toshone. He was actually able to get the ball into Stewart, and that's going to be something that the Huskies really need to get back to doing is getting the ball into Stewart. Obviously, the Pac-12, rest of the teams and coaches, they had a chance to see us pound the ball to Stewart over and over and over against the non-con, and they game planned for it. And it was important for us to have a game where, you know, Raekwon Battle was hitting threes, Jamal Bey was hitting threes, Hamir Wright, as much as I feel like I shouldn't be shooting, he was hitting threes, Nas Carter was hitting threes. Our shooters were actually finally hitting. And now when that happens,
Walter,
teams have to play Stewart honestly. And that's what we need
And Walter, here's the thing. I think that's who the key of the game is. You just said it. Nas Carter. If he could, because he's good for three or four threes a game. But here's the thing. If McDaniel does not play, then that means Roberts is getting more minutes, right?
No, I mean, they'll probably start Raekwon Battle again, I would imagine. But Roberts didn't get quite as many minutes as last game. But he'll definitely get some.
No, I'm only saying that because I think he should be able to handle Oregon inside because all Oregon really has inside is our guy from UNLV, Doofson, right? That's pretty much all they got down low, pretty much, right?
Well, their other guys are getting healthy now. Like C.J. Walker is now healthy, so that's another, you know, bigger body, 6'8", 200. They got Dante. He's available now, 6'11", 230. So they've got bodies now at their disposal. Yeah. They're getting healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I lean Washington only because, I mean, do you think Oregon, because, I mean, besides Pritchard, can you definitively say someone else on Oregon is going to be able to help Pritchard with the zone? Because I looked at Oregon against Washington State, and it looked just horrible. And
it was a two-man show for Oregon. It was Pritchard and Dorte. Those are the only two guys you can rely on to get buckets right now. Dorte is playing out of his mind. That guy is just killing it. I am worried about him.
No, Walter, I mean, I see what he's doing. But, okay, so say Dorte goes nuts. Let's just say for sake that he continues to be hot, which I don't think he could sustain the level of hotness that he's been, but that's not here or there. So let's say that he's hot. What happens if Pritchard's not? Where else are they getting scoring?
That's true, because Will Richardson's been really bad the last couple games. Anthony Mathis has been bad the last couple games. The big men that they do have are pretty limited offensively. That might be tough.
Here's the thing. So let's say for sake of saying McDaniels is out again. I hope not, because you know that's my guy. How do they plan on stopping Isaiah Stewart if McDaniels is out?
They'll just keep doing what the other teams are doing, because the other teams were forcing us to hit shots, because every time Stewart touches the ball, they're there with an auto double. But sometimes they're tripling.
Here's the thing, Walter. Like I told you, me and you are getting into the zone when it comes to Stanford defense, where you just chalk it up to the fact they're a top 10 defense. Because me and you both thought that he would wreck us inside, and it turns out he got into foul trouble, and Stanford double teamed him, and that was it. So the thing is, like I said, we're getting into that situation where Stanford's defense is actually legit. And because here's how this is how you have to look at Stanford. And again, I didn't actually think we would be good. We actually are. We lost to Butler by 1 and Kansas by 16. We ain't exactly lose to anyone shitty. So that's why, hey,
yeah.
See, and that's kind of why I like it against USC a little bit, just because the line went down one, and I know what that means normally. It means that all Stanford guys are playing.
Yeah, so circle back around, betting-wise, I know who you like, but give people, like, your number one betting lock. What's one that you're really confident about that people are going to love you for?
Arkansas?
That's a real, like, that's not just you're mad at Kentucky, right? Like, Arkansas at home, they're going to win.
Walter. Have you seen how Arkansas has been playing at home? I don't trust Kentucky on the road. I mean, here's how you have to look at it, Walter. And I'm not saying I'm going to do this for Kentucky the whole fucking year on the road, but here's the question I have for you. And this is just common sense almost. If Kentucky was bad enough to lose to South Carolina in South Carolina, they can't lose to Arkansas in Arkansas, where Arkansas has an insane home court advantage.
Yeah, no, it's possible. It's really definitely possible.
Walter, and Walter, the line, how often do you see Kentucky as an underdog?
Not very often at all.
No, and that's, but I do actually lean your Huskies, and I just wanted to ask you about the McDaniel thing, because that's, so obviously he got hurt against Cal. He finished that game though, right?
He came back, yeah, and he played through it, and it seemed fine. He played through it, but, you know, those ankle things are tough because, if you take off a shoe or something, you know, your ankle burns up. And there wasn't a lot of news about it. So it was just a pre-lock, he's in, game lock, all of a sudden it switched. So you really can't do anything about it, unfortunately. Cost us a little money on FanDuel, but, you know, it is what it is. But we've all covered everything. So you're locked. You're taking Arkansas. I love it. Let's do it. Let's bet Arkansas. Big play the game, so definitely I'll make sure to post on Twitter where people can follow you. Maybe you want to start posting on your Twitter, you know, bets that people can fail. We're getting into March Madness season, man. We're going to be doing props, all kinds of good stuff. So,
Walter. So the way I'm leaning things right now is Arkansas. I'm definitely leaning Arizona money line. I'm going to be on Richmond because that's just one of those weird lines, and they just look like they're the right side. And I'm going to have a few things going tomorrow. You'll know exactly each one. And, again, the only two games, because I'm going to take Pac-12 teams because that's what I do. The only two that I got to sleep on is your guys and mine. So that's kind of the process, but I do sort of like Florida tomorrow. The thing is, especially in betting, it's just like DFS with players. Whenever a team just looks like shit, you have to forget it. And Florida looked about as bad against Missouri as one team could possibly look. I still don't know how they gave up almost 100 points to them. Okay? So that's the thing. But then you look at the line and you see a 1 or 2 point line after a performance like that, it kind of makes you think, why is the line that? And it's just pretty much reading it as efficiently as you can and going after it. So, but
yeah,
that's kind
of day of hoops tomorrow. I'm looking forward to it, man. I appreciate it. I'm gonna let you go because I gotta write up my stuff. But let's have a big day tomorrow. All right.
Cool. We'll talk.
All right, man. See ya. Thanks, Johnny, for being on the show, giving us the betting tips. Lots of fantasy stuff tomorrow. More betting. We want to definitely be covering that more. If you guys have questions, you can definitely hit Johnny up on Twitter. We're going to start incorporating it into the show more often. And, I think overall tomorrow, for the queue, if you're playing the queue or, you know, general tournament, you know, stuff, really try to worry less about ownership and more about, you know, just building a solid core group of players and then just go from there in terms of, you know, hey, I know that everyone's going to be on Pittsburgh. I know everyone's going to be on Florida State. What can I do with these Florida guys? Or what, you know, using the news to your advantage, because there's going to be some injury news tomorrow, you know, mainly Brandon Robinson, mainly with, you know, the Florida guys that Nembhard's going to miss. And there's probably going to be a surprise. So, you know, if you're going to do this and you're going to do it seriously, you really want to pay attention to the news and go from there. But in terms of my locks tomorrow, I think you really got to just – you got to roster Marcus Howard. I hate rostering him on the road, but I don't see any way around it. I think that we're definitely going to want to have, you know, a Trey McGowan's or a Champagne. You're going to want one of those guys. And Trent Forrest, Devin Zafel, I don't see any way around rostering both of those guys. Appreciate everyone who listened. Best of luck on this slate. And if you have questions, I'll always be around, of course, on Twitter. And also, you know, be a part of our content, www.rotocurve.com/college-basketball. We got weekly, monthly, and rest of the year rates. Appreciate all you guys' continued support. More shows will be coming on a every other day basis starting next week. See you.